Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody. We have a very special guest today. This is going to be fun. Amber Kasich, who's coming to us from Michigan in the United States. Just a little bit of a heads up. As our listeners know, normally on this show, we're talking about the traditional kinds of near-death experiences where somebody dies, they go to the other side, have an experience, come back, talk about it. But sometimes we get into things that are related to that a little bit. Today, we're going to be talking about a really special shared death experience that Amber had, and I don't want to give away any more of it than that. But hi, Amber. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. Before we jump in, tell us just a little bit about you so we can get to know you.
Oh, sure. Well, hello, everybody. Hello, listeners. Hello, Eric. Again, my name is Amber Kasich. I am, your everyday person in many ways. A wife, a mom, has spent 20 years in education, 15 as a teacher, and then 5 years, and I still do a little bit of educational consulting. But in 2020, life just drastically transformed with my dad's passing. And I now also serve as an evidential medium, as well as an end-of-life coach. I have a real passion for this sacred transition of death and dying. And I work as a research intern in a volunteer capacity as well with the Shared Crossing Project. And they do a lot of work with shared death experiences, similar to what I have.
We've had people on the show that explained what they do as being a death doula. What is the difference between that and an end-of-life coach? They sound the same.
Mm-hmm. It is very similar, with the exception that I may not always be working with clients that live near me and may not be able to really accompany them at bedside, per se. And there's a little bit more of a, I'll call it just holistic well-being preparation phase that happens well ahead of time of those last weeks and days of someone's life. And that's really where my focus is. While I do sometimes support people at bedside, but also I'm really looking to just support people with their wellness and their well-being across 5 domains: physical, practical, emotional, spiritual, as they prepare for that passing. And so there's a lot of work we're doing together well before they even get to that actual passing.
So maybe a few weeks or so before they pass over.
Months even. And I have clients that are not terminally ill, but are also just sort of preparing again for that sacred transition, their wishes, their desires, how might they communicate that? And also it's a very life affirming process. I've gone through it myself. And in a way, it just affirms who we are, celebrating our life's meaning, in some cases, helping just declare that meaning in the present moment, what has been, but also for the future, for those that, again, are not necessarily at end of life.
I know so many of us are uncomfortable talking about end of life, but guess what? We're all terminal in some way or another. It may be a month or it may be 50 years or 100 years, but we're all terminal in some way. We're not going to be here forever. All right, let's talk about your father a little bit. What was going on with his health and how were you involved with it?
Sure. Well, it's a good lead-in, actually, because I'll have to tell you that I fully was in that place of not wanting to really think about, necessarily talk about, or knowing how to deal with my dad's upcoming passing when he was terminally ill. I suffered a lot in private and on my own, mostly, in preparing for my dad's passing. He passed on November 1st of 2020 and had about a 9-month prior to that terminal diagnosis, although his cancer journey was a few years long. But once that terminal diagnosis was in place, really that day that we received that was the day after Memorial Day, maybe one of the hardest days of my life, in part because I went really into this trauma kind of freeze response, not knowing how or what I was going to do. And I think the worst part for me was thinking about how was I going to control suffering? My dad's, mine. And I felt that I was about to sign up for months and months in a process of pure suffering. And it made me feel stuck. And that also impacted the ways in which I related to my dad at times. As a quick example, he would send me these sort of goofy emails almost every day with animal videos and just things to kind of make you laugh and roll your eyes. There came a point where I stopped opening them. And I remember one day my dad asked me, "Hey, did you see that video I sent you this morning?" And I said, "You know, Dad, I'm saving these because I want to have them for years." And what I was saying was I was trying to keep him in the future in a time and space when I couldn't. And looking back now, after all that I've experienced, I so wish there are certain things that I could take back. And one of them is not reveling in the present moment with my dad. He just wanted to connect with me. He wanted to share a laugh with me. He wanted to not be bothered by his troubles when he was with me and kind of deal with them in his own space. And that was a missed opportunity in that way. And now that I really experienced his transition, I felt it even in the moment. I would call it as sacred. Intuitively, I felt it was my task, my sole mission to guide him into passing. This wasn't a decision I had before. It just sort of happened in the moment. I began to see again just the sacredness of this. And it was simultaneously the most painful and beautiful, truly, experience of my life, being with him and being able to support him in his passing. And so I look back now and just think about where my emotional state was before his passing, how I view death and dying now. And we have so much to learn about the beauty, the love, and the sacredness that is offered to us in our own passing and by accompanying people through theirs, not even in a formal capacity as a family member, as just a person of care and love.
Compared to a lot of people in your situation, you had an unusually spiritual experience.
I did.
Almost going with him in some ways. Why don't you get into all of that?
Yeah, I will. That's that shared death experience piece. The shared death experience and its definition might be a little bit more common than people acknowledge. I had not even heard that term before until about a year after my experience. But I will just take a quick second to say that even without that, all of the moments in my normalcy leading up to that and being with him and feeling this intuitive call to support him in peace and guidance was really a gift and something that we all can learn from. But I did have a very spiritually transformative experience, or what I called in the moment, I would call it just an otherworldly experience, is the term that I used for a while. It was about 12 hours before he actually took his last breath physically. I now know that this is the moment when his soul transitioned. And I can explain that later and what has caused me to come to that understanding. But I have learned that there is so much more happening in death and dying than just what we think we see, than the manner of breathing and when breathing starts and stops. There is way more transition happening. Again, it was about 12 hours before my dad actually took his last breath, but which now I have that understanding that so much more is happening at the soul level. And I know that he transitioned in this moment of this shared death experience. And so I was lying alongside him in a recliner, he in a hospice bed in the living room of my parents' home. And I was holding his hand. And, you know, of course, I remember hearing like the tick-tock of the clock, literally the sound of the clock, and just being aware that every second was 1 second less in the life of my dad. And there was a lot of great painful thinking happening, thinking about, you know, that I've already had my last conversation with him a couple nights before, 2 in the morning. I'll never hear his voice again. he'll never see my son start kindergarten, and just all kinds of things. Things that were left a little bit unsaid and done, at least explicitly between he and I. It was just a place of great pain. And I think almost not by choice, I just stopped thinking. I just stopped thinking because none of that was helpful. And instead, I just put myself in the feelings of the unconditional love that was happening. Because in that moment, I was holding his hand, and his hand was still warm, and he is still my father, and he is still here. And really coming into just the full present moment and focused on the love that I was feeling and letting all that other stuff go. It's not helpful. It's not going to change anything. I think in that moment, it was also in a way a state of surrender. And in that state of surrender and unconditional love, which I now know is really important for these types of experiences, you know, my eyes were closed and I started sort of seeing swirls of purple in my mind's vision. It's very odd for me, but I didn't necessarily think anything of it, just noticing that. And then I felt this kind of tingly warmth start at the top of my head and kind of encompass my body from head to toe. And I remember having the thought, oh, the sun must be coming in the window and kind of playing tricks on me. But then I felt with full clarity what I can only describe as, because I don't quite have the most accurate words for this, but it's the best I can do. What I can describe as, I felt a force enter my back, and it's almost like a wind because there was a whoosh to it, but it's not wind because it wasn't on my skin, but there was this whoosh feeling and I felt it come into my back and just sort of settle right here in the center of my chest, which I would now call my heart center, but at that time I didn't use words like that at all. That was not a part of my worldview. This force was so powerful, the presence so palpable, and the experience was so new, unlike anything I have ever felt before. This isn't like a bubble that's kind of bugging us, you know, on the inside of our body. This is a force, a whoosh, and it's right here. And the experience was so new, I just couldn't judge it. There was nothing to judge it against. And again, I was just in that state of surrender and love. And just noticing awareness. And that force started doing slow circles like this around the center of my chest. But on the inside of my body is how that felt. Almost like, are you noticing? And I did notice. And I followed that feeling as it very slowly traveled to my shoulder and it paused. Again, almost sort of signaling to me in a way, are you aware? And then that feeling traveled again, like on the inside of my body, but it's like this force and I'm feeling it and it's going down my arm into my hand. And then I just knew that feeling went into my dad too. I knew it. A feeling of complete just well-being came over me, unconditional love. And I just had this elated knowing we are eternally bonded. It was the truest true, and it didn't even matter what it meant. I didn't have to analyze it. I didn't care what that meant. You know, if I say that now, and I sort of had this thought just now, I would be thinking to myself, well, what does that mean? He's dying, and what do you mean we're eternally bonded? And I would have all these existential questions. In that moment, I had none of those. None of it mattered because it was so true, and I didn't need to question anything. I gave him a huge hug. Of course, you know, my dad had been unconscious for 2 days. And I said in his ear to him, Dad, I don't know what that was, but I know you felt it too. And you take all that love and light in your core with you. Words I didn't really use at the time. I don't even know where that came from. Take all that love and light in your core with you and leave the old news behind. What was really wrapped up in that, when kind of reflecting back, was just a last kind of verbal, final forgiveness, if you will. And it was acknowledging him in the sense that I know you're beauty as a soul and your essence and all the other junk, kind of the stuff that, I don't know, we're close and we had a good relationship, but there was some heavy stuff. That's just junk. It's our stuff. It's not really you. And I felt so strongly that it was necessary for him to not take that with him as he went, that it was necessary for him to feel that love and light of himself and his soul and his essence and move forward into the next phase of life. And that's exactly what it is, a next phase of life, with that lightness and that peace and that worth. It was just a really beautiful moment. And I had to leave the house in that moment. I had not been with my family, my own husband and my son, for a whole week. And I had promised them I was going to come home. It was actually Halloween for a few hours. And I almost didn't want to go back to the house. I wanted that to be my last moment with my dad. And when I drove home, I was playing music in the car and I was singing my heart out and belting out the music. And I felt so much joy. And I remember thinking, what is wrong with me? Why would I feel this way? This makes no sense. But it truly was an elation, a celebration of not only love, but just this knowing we're eternally bonded. And I didn't even care what it meant. I knew it to be true. But I did go back to the house later that evening. I wanted to recreate an experience. My mind wanted to. But the second I got in that recliner and I picked up his hand, this wouldn't make sense to me totally in the moment, because I had the belief at that time that you're kind of somehow in there until you're not breathing, right? But the moment I picked up his hand, I knew he was gone. I felt it. I just knew. His body is here, but he is not. And I held his hand for the rest of the night. And in the middle of the night, he passed away. And actually, it was during daylight savings time, November 1st of 2020, here in Michigan, was the day at that time when we were changing times in the middle of the night. And at first, we didn't know what time to put on the death certificate because he passed during time change. And I absolutely find that so fitting, because time is not exactly what we think.
That's just beautiful. Thank you for sharing. There's something that I've learned from doing these interviews over the years, because I used to think, like most people, that your spirit leaves your body at the moment that your heart stops. Okay, to put it just kind of clinically. I've had some people who were in horrific car accidents, you know, like head-on collision into a cement barricade or in a car that flew off a cliff. And most of those people, if they can have a good memory of this, tell me that they were taken out of their body before the car actually smashed into that cement barricade or landed at the bottom of that cliff. They were spared that trauma, and they instead were out of their body and watched it happen, but didn't feel any of it, didn't have to go through that excruciating, not only pain split second before death, but the trauma of, oh no, here it comes. And so when you tell me that your father left a few hours before his heart actually stopped, that makes sense. It's like, why not?
So yes, I've heard things like that too in those traumatic situations. And obviously for him, this was a passing of cancer, so there wasn't all that trauma. But I have learned from my own experiences now as an evidential medium, which I was not in that moment, nor did I even fully believe in that. I kind of thought maybe, but I don't know. It wasn't something I just occupied a lot of my time with in thinking about. But I now know as a medium from my own mediumship experiences that there is, again, so much more in the days, hours surrounding our passing, of our soul kind of in both places at once. I'm not saying this is scientific, what I'm about to say, but it's a wondering I've had. Many of us have heard of terminal lucidity. My dad had a moment like that, which is sort of hours, sometimes days before someone's passing. There's a real change, a sudden change in their state. Like they haven't eaten for days, and all of a sudden they're kind of sitting up in bed and they're bright-eyed, and it's like they have their full vibrance and personality back, and they have a huge meal and they're laughing and telling jokes. We call that terminal lucidity as a part of the death and dying process that many people experience. My wondering now, kind of knowing what I know now, is if in some way the soul has already sort of met itself beyond, but the body is not finished its process yet, but that person is now really in touch with their soul, and it brings a vibrancy and a return of their consciousness. That's sort of the impression that I have based on my personal experiences.
Yeah. I had a hospice nurse on the show who talked about that very thing, only they used a different term, the place that where she worked and was trained. I believe they called it the surge. It often happened 24 to 48 hours before passing. She talked about someone who, wow, this was months ago, someone who had dementia and then been basically comatose for days. And then all of a sudden woke up, got out of bed, was crawling around playing with a child on the floor that wasn't there, but that person was seeing in the spirit world, that veil was thin or whatever, however we explain it. And sometimes when the families see that, they're like, oh, grandpa's getting better. And then they have to get the news. No, this actually means he's pretty close to being gone.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always happen, but it does happen.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to explain. I mean, I don't know if you have better insight on it than I do from a spiritual side, besides what you just mentioned.
Well, I just think that we're coming more and more into connection with our soul self at the time of passing. And I want to be clear about what I mean by that. We are always already souls. You are a soul right now. Every listener listening, your soul isn't something out there that we're going to look for or find one day or meet one day. The soul is your essence that is already you, beyond your human conditioning. So the personality characteristics that you associate yourself with, the career, the belief system, all those things, they're also you. They are your identity, but they're not the only you. And if we were to uncover those things, what's left is soul. And so when people are nearing their passing, this stuff starts to fade away. They're not thinking about daily life and all the stuff that is bothering them. They're not, many people don't even want to watch the news anymore. I know my dad, who loved the news, all of a sudden, days before his passing, it's like he didn't even want it on. He wanted TV on, but not that. There's just stuff that falls away about ourselves. And as those pieces fall away, what's left is soul. I believe that people are, it's not, again, that they're finding their soul. They're becoming more in full alignment with the awareness of the soul that they already are. And that's a part of what's happening at that time. I can also tell you, I had a mediumship experience, and this was before I was offering mediumship professionally. But it's what made me say, I can't not do this for people. I had to take the day off work the next day in my normal education life because it was so profound. It reminded me so much of that sacred transition of passing and my dad's passing. And it put me in touch with, this is who I'm meant to be, to help support people in various ways through death and dying. And it's a great example of what we're talking about. I had a woman contact me who was just sort of, again, I was just like practicing at this time. There was no money involved. It was just an interesting curiosity that I was following. And she contacted me, wanted to do a practice together. She was also in some spiritual classes and so on and so forth. And so as we sat together, this was on January 11, 111. I'll remind you that my dad passed on 111, November 1st, just a little different, but numbers the same. And Her name was Mary, my client. And as we sat together and I opened up my heart space and sat in tune with that essence of soul, I felt this woman so strongly. And I knew she's very petite. She's got brown hair. She's very petite. She's showing me a Virgin Mary statue with art utensils at its feet. And then I had this impression of confusion and I kept going, I don't know what it means, but I feel old and then young and then old and then young. And she kind of paused and said, you know, this sounds just like my aunt. She has Alzheimer's, which would make sense for the old and young. And she paints Virgin Mary statues as a hobby and gives them away. But she is living in a long-term care facility. She has not passed away. But because it was so clear, and she is very petite and her characteristics lined up, so because the evidence was so glaring, it caused me to say, what's happening here? Can we just connect as souls? This is fascinating. Do you mind if I proceed? And we were both kind of fascinated. And so I continued and she helped me feel. She was doing this in my awareness and was helping me feel. I need to pull up my blanket. I'm missing my blanket. I don't know where my blanket is. And I could feel that she was fine, but she wanted comfort. She wanted this blanket because it's so comforting. She showed me a stuffed animal, and I felt that was missing too. Things are out of place. Things are missing. Of course, my client didn't know any of this, so we just sort of thought that was interesting. She'll have to let me know. And as I move forward, and this is where it's really special, if that's not special enough, but this man comes into my awareness, and he's very manly. I can feel it. I can feel it in my chest. I've got a deep voice, and my chest is broad and I'm real manly. And then I said to her, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I'm holding shopping bags, this manly man, and I'm wearing high heels. And I'm going, ha, 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 ha. She started laughing, but also went and said, this is my aunt with Alzheimer's, her brother. At the last family gathering before he passed, he imitated my petite aunt in her high heels carrying all her shopping bags and was parading around the room going, ha, 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 ha. And she shared the picture with me. That man, brother in spirit, was here to help me understand that he was supporting this aunt in her transition. That he was here to care for her. He kept just saying, I'm here to help. I'm here to support. I'm caring. And there was also a little bit of, I don't know if I want to use the word excitement, but anticipation is a good word. The feeling of anticipation in him. And so, of course, both of us were just sort of in awe, not sure what to think. And so we exchanged phone numbers. And she called me later that night and said, Amber, I have to tell you. And I wasn't sure how I was going to handle all this. And then an hour after we finished our time together, I got a call from my aunt's caretaker. The care facility called them. They informed the family that they believed she was going to pass and, you know, that if they wanted, they should come to the care facility. So the family did go. And you know what? Her blanket was missing. Her stuffed animal was missing. They found it in a laundry room, but it had been folded and put on a shelf and no one knew where it was. And so they were able to bring those things to her bedside. And again, it's not about she had to have those to pass, but all of us at passing, we just want comfort. We just want to be able to relax into our bodies and relax into the peace of what's going on to support our physical selves and that soul transition. So here was that aunt as a soul already a bit on the other side, just sort of waiting for that full transition to take place and letting me know what was going to just support extra peace and comfort in that, which was having her things. This was really impactful. As I said, I took the day off work the next day of my full-time job and just sat in the profoundness of not only what this means about death and dying, but also, again, the sacredness of transitioning. It's a part of life. It's, in a way, it has its own beauty to it. And that was the day that I said, I can't not do this for people. I have to.
That's so interesting. A lot of people that have an NDE or your SDE, or I'm going to throw out another three-letter thing, STE, spiritually transformative experience, come back with some kind of what I like to call spiritual gift, okay? Whether it's for you, it's this evidential mediumship. Some people have psychic abilities. Some people know a little bit about the future. Some people see out-of-body spirits and angels regularly. As you know, there are a number of different things like this. And I don't think any of this would happen if it wasn't for a good reason. So I assume that with this new ability of yours, you are helping people. And you just gave one good example of that. Why do you think, and I'm asking you to totally speculate, why do you think this happens to some people, but not to others? Some people have had profound NDEs and none of this. They're changed, but they're still regular old Joe.
Yeah, I totally understand what you mean by that. A couple of comments. One, just to share, when my dad had that SDE, it wasn't even just that moment. And I'm expressing this because it relates to your question. But he and I began to have a relationship that I didn't necessarily believe at first. I thought I might be going crazy, or I thought my mind was inventing things, until it became very clear with evidence that this is very real. He and I began to communicate, and he really guided me down this journey. It wasn't just like all of a sudden I developed mediumship abilities, but every step I took, a new door opened. And what's interesting is my father, when he was in his 30s, had a motorcycle accident, died. He was dead for a few minutes, revived. They told him he would probably never be a police officer again, at least not out on the streets walking and doing all the things police officers need to do. And he did not have any recollection of any type of experience. But here he was in his actual passing in the beyond, very clearly having a soul experience and able to, in some ways, share some of that with me. And I asked myself for a long time, like, why is this happening to me? You know, I'm not special. I mean, I'm special, but so are you. So is every single person listening to this show. We are all equally special and worthy. But I would wonder, why me? And for me in particular, I just know that this was meant to be a part of my path. I was meant to develop this ability of mediumship. It needed to happen at that time in my life. That was just the time that my consciousness decided it was ready. So in some ways, I believe that we are meant for some things. But some of this, in my opinion, also has to do with our conscious awareness of these experiences. I think that the more that we are simply open to them, and the more that we're educating ourselves about these, then the more our awareness can be aware of beautiful moments of experience and connection with spirit, or with things of spirit, and with things of soul. In a lot of ways, sometimes we're just not really aware or acknowledging this other aspect of ourselves. And that was me well before all of this. I remember a moment, a day I got in a bad car accident in my 20s, and when I had gotten in the car that day and was only a block away at a stoplight, I heard a voice say, "You've got to be careful while driving today." Not my own voice, some other voice. But it's almost like I dismissed it so strongly that I even stopped thinking about it. I only kind of remembered that after I got in the accident a few hours later. And so it is my strong belief that all of us, to varying degrees, have a connection to the essence of life. It's only our conditioning that is covering up this connection. And so with awareness of you as the essence of life, as a piece of the tapestry of connection that just is, it can be no other way. You can begin to slowly choose to be aware of what might already be happening for you that is showing you the connection that you are. So while I was pushed down this path, if you will, I also think we all, it's our birthright to experience our connection to consciousness because we are consciousness.
Okay, a couple other quick questions before we wrap up. One is, I like to ask people who have had a near-death experience, how much fear of death do they have now? Now, you had a different experience. Where's your level of fear of death?
I have zero fear of death. Absolutely zero. And in some ways, and don't take this the wrong way, I can't wait to be here until I'm a very old woman. But in some ways, I cannot wait. It's just going to be an adventure. As long as my family is fine and my son is well and grown and we're able to exchange our love and I feel content that I'm leaving everything well, I'm ready for the adventure because that's what this is. And also, I just know that I'm going to be enveloped in love. I know that I'm going to be greeted by my dad. I know without a shadow of a doubt that I'm going to get to see my soul pal, Yellow Lab, Bailey again. I have no doubt of that. And I just have more of a mountaintop perspective now, thank you to my dad, of who we are. And there's so much more to life than just what we see.
It's okay to be excited about going to the other side, but not today.
Exactly. Just I'll be ready for the adventure when the time is
right. When the time is right, and that's okay. Also, another commonality with people that have near-death experiences and you is their life often changes in big ways, such as change in employment. And I don't just mean a job. I mean whole career kinds of changes and other things like that. What else happened in your life that became different?
Well, there was just a lot of inner transformation, first and foremost, besides how I was seeing the world. Because of my communication that I was having with my dad in spirit, especially for that first year, there was a lot of healing offered. Also, I was given perspectives to see certain instances that, you know, all of us in life have things that cause us trauma, and sometimes things that cause trauma because of the way we're viewing them. Not necessarily, it's how we have internalized different things. And so there was a lot of healing, growing in the knowing of my own worth. And worth not like, I'm so amazing, more worth like, I am a beautiful, treasured soul. And I got to really feel that. And it was some of the most humbling experiences that I've ever had. And I got to feel how we're all that very same sense of worthiness, every single one of us. So feeling myself in new ways was very healing. And then also, I became way less interested in the news. And to this day, I want to know what's going on in the world, but I do not allow myself and even feel inclined to, is a better word for it, getting wrapped up in this stuff. Because you know what? It's all just the muck.
We get drugged down by it. We can spend too much time with it.
Totally. And it's just not really who we are. And those getting trapped in those emotions and just the muck of life takes us out of that higher expansiveness and connection. I used to get really annoyed, I'll tell you this, before all of this, when people would say, ah, watch the news less, and out of an empathy piece, I would feel like, but I have to. It's like I have to. It's almost validating of the people that are experiencing all these horrible things. Like, I have to. And now I get it. It's not that I'm uninformed, and it's not that I'm still not feeling the empathy or validating people in my own way. But I'm also just in that higher perspective of who we are, and more importantly, who we all could be, who we all could be. And that doesn't mean everybody should be the same. We're not supposed to all be the same. It means taking ourselves out of the muck and seeing not only ourselves, but others from a higher perspective. That would change the world. So there's that. I get in less Facebook arguments all that kind of stuff. I see people for the worth that they are, even people I don't necessarily like all that much.
How about personal relationships? Did any of those change?
Yeah, I love sharing this actually. My mom and I became a lot closer as a result of these experiences. And I don't think that that's an accident either. I think my dad felt in spirit a sense of responsibility for bringing us together in a different way. And that was also very healing. My mom has been so validating of these experiences for me, and she did not believe in mediums, did not believe in mediumship at all. But my dad proved it to us in one special moment. I was in the middle of a work project, and I felt his presence. This was like 4 months after he died. And by then, I knew when I felt it, and I had believed it by now, and I tuned in. I mean, I was literally my hands on the keyboard, and I just tuned in, and I heard his actual voice in my mind, and it said, "Call Mom. She's sad and eating pudding right now." And I picked up the phone. Well, actually, I didn't at first because I was a little afraid. What if she's not sad? What if she's not eating pudding? And when I didn't, I felt my dad's non-judgmental disappointment. Non-judgmental, but he really wanted me to call her. So because I felt that emotion from him in spirit, I grudged up the courage and I called my mom. She was crying. She was crying when she answered the phone. And there's something wrong in the house that normally my dad would deal with. And she was struggling and it was bringing up all her grief. And I asked her, "Mom, were you just eating pudding?" "Yes, I was eating pudding. Why are you asking me that?" And I shared with her what had happened. And it brought just this huge moment of joy in her. That was like the moment for her where she really knew, just knew beyond the shadow of a doubt, that all this stuff that I've been saying and feeling really, really is true. And there was just a lot of kind of healing communication that occurred from that and through that. Her validation of me and trust in me and belief in me through all of these experiences in its own way has been very healing. And, you know, while no relationships are perfect, we have a different level of relating to each other and closeness because of all of this. And I know that was in part on purpose. I know it.
All right. If anybody wants to reach out to you, do you mind if I put your website in the show notes?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love that.
Just scroll down, anybody, you'll find it. I'm going to give you the last word here. One of the things that you said early on is that you learned that we are, quote, eternally bonded. Would you please just explain that a little bit more? And who are we bonded to?
Every single one of us is eternally bonded to source connection. There is no separation, number one. And if I could wrap up all of my years of experience into one phrase that is at the heart of everything and what is most important for everyone to understand, it is this. You are already divine, already whole, already worthy. You don't have to prove yourself to anyone or anything or any being. Every single one of us is so very loved, so profoundly worthy at the level of soul. And we have no idea how cared for and connected we are. Yeah, sometimes to loved ones in an eternal sense, but also just to the source of spirit. You are not alone, even if it's unrecognizable to your heart.
Amber, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening and sharing this podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button and sign up for our newsletter at roundtripdeath.com. If you want to share your near-death experience, or if you have questions or comments about the show, send an email to eric@roundtripdeath.com. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.